within 1 degree of 1 year of getting her doctor's degree. She was employed in the medical school to start with as a technician in the chemistry department in the medical school here in Louisville,
uh-huh.
under Dr. Taylor, who was okay. then the head of the department. And she worked there for, I don't know how long, probably 6 or 7 years.
Uh-huh.
Then, I don't know anything about why or how, but she then took a position as a doctor's assistant with Dr. Shane, who mm-hmm. was a practitioner, but he was also a research doctor under in the medical school mm-hmm. at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd given it up since, but at that time he was one of the research professors on... Sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
He was a research professor working on stomach disorders and that sort of thing, digestive processes.
Mm-hmm.
And so my wife was interested in it, and she worked for him
mm-hmm.
for quite a while. Then that was downtown. And finally, due to traffic congestion, she decided that it wasn't worthwhile to drive that far downtown. We lived out in the county, and there was no direct public transportation from where we lived downtown. There was from Iroquois Park, but we were quite a ways from Iroquois Park. Then she worked for Dr. Yankee Love out at the in the Reynolds building,
mm-hmm.
who was also in the medical school,
mm-hmm.
and she worked for him for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
until finally she decided that the attempt to keep up part-time,
mm-hmm.
and she and Dr. Yankee Love agreed that she would retire from that. Of course, she wasn't old enough to get any retirement benefits or anything of that sort, but she just quit. And,
mm-hmm.
and then took up gardening. One of the things we did when we moved out where we are now to this little patch of land about, well, it wasn't about, we had 12 acres
mm-hmm.
altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided to, that she wanted to raise some animals. And so she started in on chickens. And we got information from the University of Kentucky on chicken raising, and I built her a chicken coop
mm-hmm.
and all the things that go along with it. And I told her at that time, I remember this quite distinctly because I was very positive about it in my own mind. I said, "You can have as many animals as you want, my dear, as long as you take care of them." But I came out of a farm activity, and I didn't like the farming, and so my wife learned how to milk a cow, and we had a cow, and she learned, we also had goats, because my daughter, the one we adopted, couldn't tolerate cow's milk, but she couldn't tolerate goat's milk, so
huh.
we got a herd of goats, and had those, and she raised chickens in order to keep herself busy, and so I had a clientele down at the university where I delivered fresh eggs every now and then. They called me the butter and egg man, although I never delivered any butter. But anyway, we sold eggs, and that helped out. And at that time, it was very useful because my salary wasn't very large, really, and so. We went along like that and had a real good time, and of course the faculty used to kid me about my the people that I sold them to didn't kid me because they liked the eggs. They were fresh and knew where they came from. And my wife had become very much interested in organic farming,
uh-huh.
and we have a pretty good garden, and she indulges in raising things for the table, and being a chemist, she turned out to be an excellent cook, and I was very happy about that. And this about, I think, gives the highlight of our family. My daughter married a sergeant of the Army and moved around many other places, and they finally settled in Louisville. My son turned out not to be intellectual. He was a very good little boy when he was young. When he got a little bit older, school wasn't his forte, and I had sense enough not to attempt to force him. And as a result of which, he finally left home and got himself a job and turned out to be a pretty good citizen. I didn't know too much about his background, so I won't comment on that. Then that about, I think, gives the main story of the family.
Are there?
And my wife is still living, and my daughter and son are still living. And my daughter has a family, and I'm a great-grandpa.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. I have one, two, three, four, five, six, I think, great-grandchildren. So far, I don't have any great-great-grandchildren. The kids aren't that old enough yet. One of the grandchildren, two of the grandchildren are now in Florida with very good jobs. And, well, the daughter, of course, is she's one of them down there. And she married a man who was interested in electronics, and he got a job with the Louisville Nashville Railroad. And he's down now with a good job in Florida. My other grandson is interested in selling. He follows his father pretty much that way. When my son-in-law was finally retired in the Army, he got work here in Louisville, mostly in activity involving salesmanship. He's a very good salesman, and he's made a very good life for himself and family doing this sort of thing. He's at present working for a company here in Louisville who handles cars. He's a car salesman. So we have very good family relationships with my son and with my daughter.
Are there any things that that you thought we should discuss that we haven't covered? Are there any things that we've missed?
I think this is probably about all that really is.
Okay.
Except I'm still working at the physics department and enjoying my work very much. And although I'm 83 years old, I think, as I've indicated, they're keeping me on, so they must be reasonably happy with me there. And I just can't think of anything else except the items that I mentioned before we started this interview, that one of the firms that I couldn't remember was Henry Folk Machine Company, who gave us these boiler tubes, which made a part of the instrument of the 20-inch telescope tube. And aside from that, and aside from, again, a rather positive statement about the kind of activity that I really originated and organized, getting men who knew how to do things to do the work on the telescope, rather than trying to get somebody with money and then go out and try to hire a telescope built. So the telescope itself, I had, I can't give exact numbers, but close enough. The telescope, remember, this is a 20-inch telescope, and a very good one, really, was, the finances came to less than $500. Of course, that couldn't be done now, because rental metal doesn't give aluminum anymore. give away.
Yeah.
I doubt very much that Smith's, the Smuts foundry would give us a mounting, and I think some of the men who worked would probably still do it for their interest in astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'll put this in as a last resort. I hope we have tape enough. 3 years ago, in 1979, Roger Mills, who was at that time was the vice president, but who was also a professor of physics, got interested in having a Foucault pendulum, which is a special kind of pendulum that which will indicate the movement of the Earth, the rotation of the Earth. And he called a group of us together. I was in the group. Professor Baxter and Bell from Speed School was in the group. Dr. Mills was in the group. And Dr. Dillon, who was then dean of the graduate school and also a vice president of one sort or another. This was in 1977, I think, when this group got together. And we all stuck our necks out, and I said, I'll build the ball if the rest of you will do the rest of it. Baxter and Bell volunteered to do the electronics when I got the ball built. And, of course, Dr. Mills was interested in furnishing me with the necessary data so that I could build the ball. And a Japanese by the name of Takeuchi, who was in the design section of the university, he designed the ball and the things that go with it that indicate the rotation. And I built the ball, and I built the metal parts of the circle which indicated the movement of the ball. And then for quite a while we just pushed the ball when it got finally finished. We pushed the ball by hand, and because Baxter and Bell were just a little bit, they had some research that they were doing for some other companies and couldn't get around to doing the electronics right away. And then the ball was finally assembled. I made the pattern, and Dr. Mills took it somewhere, I don't know where, and got it cast in solid brass. And then I devised a machine that would go in my lathe so that I could turn out an accurate spherical ball, and the associated pieces which go with it to make it look like a pendulum. he bought all the material, but I did the work of working with it. There was a donor who was anonymous that gave the money for the materials. We didn't have money enough to hire it done again, like a little bit like the building of a 20-inch telescope in a way. And so those of us at the university, myself and Baxter and Bell, and we finally called in the, I didn't have anything to do with that, Mr. Mills, or Dr. Mills, called in the carpenter shop to do the decorations that Takeuchi had wanted to put on this metalwork that I put in around to show the indication of the movement of the pendulum. And that is still in active process. It's just about completed, but the electronics is giving them a little bit of trouble. And I was over there day noon before I came over here to do this interview, and Baxter and Bell and Dr. Mills were in conference about what to do to keep the little light, which was to indicate the movement of the pendulum to keep it in synchronization with the pendulum itself, and they were doing that electronically. I don't know a thing about that, so I'm not going to comment on it. If anybody wants to know about that, they'll have to talk with Baxter and Bell.
Okay.
So the pendulum and the observatory are going to be two things that will probably last longer than I will here at the University of Louisville, and I've been very much interested in being able to be a part of this. In fact, I'm very glad to be a part of it.
It's been a delight to talk to you. It's been educational to learn about the telescope, and it's been inspirational to learn how that telescope was built. And
one thing in this report that you wanted was, I think you asked the question, what would I do differently?
Yeah.
Given the chance, what are some of the things that you would do differently? Well, I'm sorry, but if I had the same chance, under the same circumstances, this life with the university has been so satisfactory, as far as I'm concerned, that there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that I would do differently, except I'd try to be a little bit better, maybe. I don't think I was all that good, but there isn't anything that I would do. For example, I tried one time, as I indicated, I think, in a former interview, I tried to get in as a tool and die maker in 1922 when we had a minor recession. And fortunately for me, that recession made it impossible to get a job as an apprentice to a tool and die maker. So I kept on with my college education and graduated in 1924 with a Bachelor of Arts degree. And I've been very thankful since that I didn't get the job as tool and die maker, because I found that my teaching experience with students, and especially living and having to do with students like James G. Baker, and a student that I had whose name was Thomas, and I can't remember his last name anymore, who was, I used to, he'd put up his hand and indicate that I'd made a mistake in my lectures, and sure enough, it always turned out that that was true. I'd made a mistake. This student was able to catch me at it. I didn't do it on purpose. I just had made a blunder, and and he was so good in mathematics. We got him the university, not myself, got him a fellowship at Oxford, England, and he went over there, and his fellowship was extended. It was only supposed to be 1 year, but he was so good they extended it. And so that made two students. Except that this particular student, for some reason or other, he got a mental quirk and gave up mathematics, in which he excelled, and took up the writing of poetry. And finally, I understand he committed suicide. So that didn't turn out as well. But James G. Baker has turned out excellently well, and he's still going, doing good work in optical design, so on. Those are two students that I've had that, I've had a lot of good ones, but I mean, they were two, the outstanding, very much. And so therefore, that's the reason, I think, having associated with those students and associated with Dr. Kent, and with many of the faculty here at the University of Louisville. You must remember that my background is not one that ordinarily professional people like myself come from. I came from a poor family. My father was a farmer. My mother was, as far as I know, was just ordinary. And, I'm not much better than ordinary, but at least I'm in a different group than I would have been if I had stayed on the farm. If I'd stayed on the farm, I probably would have hated myself all my life and I know I wouldn't have liked it. I wouldn't have been any good at it because I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like farming in order to be good at it. And you have, but in fact, the matter is, I guess you have to like anything that you're doing. And so I would rather teach than do anything else, except that, as I've indicated, I think maybe not in the interview, but with you, I've indicated that my hearing got so bad that I decided in 1967 that it was time for me to retire. And so I had officially retired 2 years before, mm-hmm. but Dr. Spraggins, who was then head of the department, kept me on as a part-time mm-hmm. teacher, and I had taught for 2 years after I had mm-hmm. officially retired. Mm-hmm. Because I was good enough at it, so they were glad to keep me. But in 1967, I realized that my hearing was going bad. And so I just retired definitely. And I was out for 1 year. And then, as I've indicated in the interview before, it became possible to come down to the physics department part-time and do this work in machine shop, which had been my hobby mm-hmm. all my life. In fact, I put myself through college in a machine shop, and except for 1 year that I spent in high school teaching, all my college work was done, not necessarily part-time. I was a full-time student, but I worked part-time
mm-hmm.
at this shop in Albion, Michigan, for a man who was very much interested in students like myself, and I wasn't the only one. He had others, and he would give us jobs even when he didn't have anything for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able then to keep on to school, where I couldn't have done. Of course, now a student gets a scholarship or gets a loan or something like that, but I came out of Albion College owing $25 to the Methodist Church that I had gotten a loan when mm-hmm. going got tough.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all the debt I had when I finally got my degree. And then from then on, I paid my way. $300 the next year I got, as I told you about it before.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, after that first year, they gave me a teaching fellowship, and then I was in heaven because I got $1,000 a year and could live on it comfortably. And then when I don't remember what my salary was when I got the year's appointment as a full-time instructor, but it was enough to start a family, so
mm-hmm.
that year was 1928, and I got my wife, and then 1929, we came to Louisville. And from then on, you know the story from this.
I sure have enjoyed talking to you. And
thank you. I've enjoyed very much giving this, and whoever happens to read it, they probably can tell from the way I've been talking that I really enjoyed doing this sort of thing.
Well, I hope they can.
Sorry it's over, but I'm also glad because there are other things that need to be done, and Christmas vacation is coming up now, and I think it's time to quit.
Okay.
Goodbye.